Hey everyone, it's me, Blaine. Welcome. If you go to thealabamatake.com these days, you've got an option to leave us a voice message. You can specify a podcast you want to talk to, tell them what's up, tell them your thoughts. We'll get it sent to the right place and get a response in the podcast itself. It's been a few weeks since I've mentioned The Gentleman on Netflix. His life tends to take center stage. Did you know that you still have to feed kids even after they stop being babies? We learned so much in parenting. So The Gentleman is a Netflix show from creator and director Guy Ritchie, who directs several of the episodes and produces the rest. It stars Theo James as a member of a British family. He's in the military as the show begins. He gets a call that his father is doing poorly as far as health is concerned. He goes home. His father dies. And suddenly, the Theo James character Edward is named the Duke of the estate, despite being the younger of two brothers. From there, he's let in on his now deceased father's secret that there's a massive marijuana operation growing center under their estate. That is really not a spoiler. I keep things spoiler free early in the episode. That happens in 5 minutes time of the episode. Plus, you know, if you've read any kind of headline about the show, you know that. I really hated putting this show on the back burner because it really is entertaining. If Guy Ritchie knows nothing else, he understands how to pace movies, and in this case, episodes of TV. To me, his other works have honestly been a little frantic, but here he's tamped that down so the quick cuts aren't mere exaggerations, but they kind of color the story and fill in blanks where other versions of this story would have long tangential narrative that could bore you. Here, though, it works better shorthand, and it's good. You know, it's almost as if Guy Ritchie understands the story he's telling. It's not drama. It's not action. It's somewhere between the two with plenty of comedy. It is funny. It's got some true moments of comedy as well as tension. It's kind of above that mid-TV a little because it's so self-aware, and it's just so fucking fun to watch. I don't get into that next Bond talk because those films have always bored the piss out of me. But how do you not consider Theo James as the role? He's charming. He's irresistible. In this show, he is. He carries this sense of intelligence to roles. I say he needs to be Bond. He needs to be in consideration. Still not going to watch a James Bond movie, but cast Theo James. By the way, how is an action movie franchise that tedious? I don't get it. But as for The Gentleman on Netflix, I'm of the belief that a lot of you would like it. The ending and the series as a whole does subvert a few likely expectations you may have about shows akin to it, depending on what you tend to think when you're watching them. But for the most part, it does it all in a pretty quality way. For 8 episodes, I believe most anyone would get a kick out of it. Although there is one middle episode that lagged. Forge through it. You'll find yourself having a really good time with The Gentleman. Also, keeping up with Under the Bridge. This might count as a little bit of a spoiler for Under the Bridge, the most recent episode. Skip ahead 30 seconds, maybe a minute if you don't want to hear it. The most recent episode employed a voiceover in the style of the book The Lovely Bones. I mean, it felt taken directly from it, and it did not work. But the episode was wise to only use it at the beginning and the end. It is a shorter episode, and I think it does almost too good of a job of coloring Rena as a human because it gives damn near her entire family history, at least the part of her family that's been in British Columbia. The creators here are doing more than just checking boxes to make sure the victim isn't just a name or some unknown tragedy. Here it's a little overdone because I don't know if we needed to know everything. I do love the scenes where it helped me see how Rena gets more entangled with some of these girls. As for some other television, Colin Farrell, Apple TV Plus, the show Sugar. This weekend it had its big moment. I would have loved to have gotten this completely blind, but every critic and his mother had to put something about it in their headlines. This was episode 6, and they still put this in the headlines of their reviews. I don't get it. Yeah, there were big glaring signposts, and yes, there is a specific genre label attached to this show if you're careful enough to see it or find it. However, I'm an idiot viewer. I don't look for puzzles. I don't look to try to figure things out. I wonder how I would have reacted. Now I'm definitely fascinated by the show because I'm thinking, how the hell can, what, how the hell can it do anything now? Where's it going to go? Also, I'm continuing to wrap up on Apple TV Plus, is Manhunt, the series about Secretary of War Edwin Stanton's search for the Lincoln assassin. We all know. John Wilkes Booth, they all know, too. I called this show incredibly anachronistic with its dialogue. It just feels like it was rushed in the writer's room, or no one paused to say, is that how they would talk in Civil War America, post-Civil War? You know what? The last few episodes have been pretty good. I've got two more before I'm finished with the series and give a more conclusive nod or shaking of the head to Manhunt. But, you know, it's a show for those of us who can forgive some kind of major flaws and want to know more about a blurry part of history in America. Set design is beautiful. I really do feel transported when I watch the show. I just wish there weren't things that jarred me out of that transportation. Tobias Menzies stars as Edwin Stanton, and every now and again I struggle to think, is he able to carry this show almost by himself? He's done well so far. Let's get in the show, get the other guys in here.
Alabama Tape Projection.
You know how people say that these people need no introduction. It's not the case here. These two gentlemen joining me now need an introduction. Adam, musician extraordinaire, literary mind. And Donovan, we've got a film buff, encyclopedic knowledge, and also a media specialist. These two guys like the idea of freedom.
I'm more into democracy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Over yeah. freedom.
That's kind of what we got now.
Yeah.
Good for you. You fit right in. We will get into the specifics of the sympathizer in the back half, but at the front of the show, we like to talk general, vague, broadly. Donovan, where are you after three? No spoilers involved.
Big thumbs up. Love Park Chan-wook. I just looked up how to say his name and it has escaped me. The gentleman that plays the captain.
It's a difficult name for me to say personally.
It's with an SH sound and I've completely, so I apologize, Captain. You're doing great.
He is good.
Some raves for my wife. Misery porn, she calls it. And I will never watch again, she says.
Raves, Dr. Beth. Okay, that's right. So let me ask you this. Who is this show for?
Me.
Yeah. Anyone else? Academics, right?
Academics.
Yeah, it seemed like it, right? So for me, this is going on story alone because I'm a simpleton. I thought that the second episode dipped so low that I wouldn't be surprised to find out that people bailed for good on it.
Wow.
And I wouldn't blame them. I found myself shocked that the book is a Pulitzer Prize winning. But then the third episode came around, and I was like,
I'm curious to hear your thoughts, because I like the second and third episode both.
Yeah, I'll explain it more. I just found the second one quite slow in comparison to the first and the third.
Interesting. I found the second one pretty speedy.
Can I ask for a clarification on what you mean by dip so low? Because I'll introduce my vantage point on this. I have read the book.
Yeah.
It's been some time, but I have not seen the series, so I'm interested in... And maybe the beats that you're referring to. You say dip so low is in what Donovan, his wife, lovingly referred to as misery porn. Was that what it was? Or are you saying it wasn't good?
No, I do think it was good. I think that the pacing halted things.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't have that experience at all.
And it was also leaving me wondering what story it's telling. What's the undercurrent here? Because I thought I had a good grasp on it in the first episode. And I feel like I lost it in the second. And then in the third, I feel like I kind of regained it. But it looks like from trailers for the fourth, I'm going to lose it again, which is really weird. Like I can see how this works as a book. I don't know if it's going to be working for me personally as a show, but I am liking a lot of it. And I'm, like I said, I'm totally going story alone because I'm a simpleton. Visuals, fantastic. Acting, stellar. Does it put me in the time period? Yes. Set design, wonderful. Music, I mean, you know, but just story, I'm like, what? What's going on?
We're going to have some spirited conversation.
We will. Back after the show, we'll talk the sympathizer. I thought the third episode did have a lot of propulsion and a clearer sense of the narrative. More specifics later.
Tune in to hear us fight. Boy fights. Come
here. What's boy fights? Is that a thing? Is that an internet slang I haven't caught up with?
It's an Arrested Development thing.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, and the Baby Buster shorts. Quiero la leche de mama.
You guys will throw out those Arrested Development quotes, and I'll catch about 75% of them usually.
Should we do the rest of the show only in Arrested Development?
Yes, please. You have to have spent the last 20 years dedicated to poisoning your brain, Blaine. That's
No. I love the show, and I watch.
That's really what it takes.
I watched that first season a ton, the second season a little less, and
so on and so forth.
You know how they talk about brain plasticity mm-hmm. and rewriting your neural pathways?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Mine are in the shape of Balboa, Great of Balboa in the OC, populated by the Bluths. It's a dark place. Think of all the information that could be there. It's not.
So there's your general ideas about The Sympathizer and Arrested Development, which we always recommend here. We're going to dip into The Challenge in broad terms, okay? So no spoilers here yet, because we have a season of All Stars currently airing. I've come to realize there are three things happening with people in The Challenge. They either A, watch this show religiously, B, have no idea it exists or what it is, or C, shocked it's still on.
You're talking about taking it down, right?
You're still doing that, buddy?
I do get that question a lot more than you would think. No, probably not a lot more than you think. I get a lot. It's almost like wrestling in that sense. That seems like those are wrestling fans. They're like, I didn't know that was a thing. I watch it religiously. Or, oh yeah, I used to watch that when I was 12. We're not in spoilers. We're getting The Challenge All-Stars 4th season on Paramount Plus in just a second. Adam, is The Challenge comparable to pizza?
I have eaten a lot of pizza while watching it, but I need you to expand more on this
There's no
metaphor.
No such thing as bad pizza. There's no such thing as bad challenge season.
I've had some bad pizza.
Okay, well,
speak on that.
Is The Challenge comparable to sex? There's no such thing as bad sex. It's just sex.
I think the Me Too movement has taught us.
Okay. You have quashed all of my analogies today.
I hope you got more.
No, I'm just saying that even a bad season of The Challenge is worthy of your time and fun.
Yeah, I mean, even season 39 of the flagship program kind of sucked, but I watched every episode.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you think, well, this is 90 minutes of my week that's kind of just glossy fun most of the time. So yeah. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I never choose to include it in my list of good shows at the end of the year. I don't even bother to put it in there. It's just something I watch, you know, 48 weeks out of the year.
it just always exists.
Yeah, it always exists.
Yeah. Like, I just have a problem.
But Adam, what is it you like about it? And is there a certain type of person who would like this show who doesn't know about it?
Because, you know, Natalie watched it for years and years, and I kind of begrudgingly sat on the couch while this was happening. Mm-hmm. And I got converted during the final of the Free Agents season because it was just impressive enough physically what they were doing. But they also were getting paired with people who, like, there was some luck on the right partner at the right time. And the hatred that they could express for each other very eloquently in these high-pressure situations made for great television. I do think we can get into this with All Stars specifically and the direction that that show appears to be heading. People who were on Real World and Road Rules could express themselves and had interesting points of view and could communicate really well with each other. And I think that's dropped off quite a bit in the last few seasons. But if you go back and watch those old seasons, I mean, there's, you know, the house drama isn't just like you get drunk and have a disagreement. They can actually, I don't know. It's interesting to see personalities collide.
Is that a sign of not being from Real World role rules, or is that just a sign of the times?
I think it's both, but I do think that the interview process to get on one of those shows was maybe different than to get on Big Brother or Either One or whatever feeder shows are coming to this.
I'm imagining the articulated, like, getting drunk and having an argument as, like, someone just pounded out of their mind, like, Wittgenstein did solve most problems with modern philosophy. What the fuck are you talking about?
Okay, maybe not quite that.
It's not that level.
I think maybe a higher level emotional intelligence in how to mess with each other. I mean, they're not having, like, a lot of, like, intense dialogue like Donovan joked about.
Or maybe just how to react to someone who doesn't agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's all conflict management.
Yeah. That's one of the aspects of the show I really do like is one week, me personally, I will like so-and-so, and then the next week I'm like, no, I don't like you anymore. What are you doing?
Right. Because they reacted a specific way to a certain circumstance. Yeah. And I can't take away the fact that it's just fun to watch. Like, when the challenges themselves, the dailies, are enjoyable, they're, I'll use it a word, just kind of glossy magazine fun to view. You know, they do cool things, and they're generally athletic people. You have a rooting interest most of the time. It can change somewhat season to season, but they've been doing it so long now that, you know, CT is an obvious example of somebody that you see have a whole bad guy to good guy arc and some real life stuff happen in that. So it rewards committed viewing, I suppose. So when they go into these eliminations, you have this whole backstory in your head of this guy lining up against this guy in hall brawl and who you want to win and who you want to get, you know, sent to the hospital.
And I would assert that even if you don't know, this is for people who really don't know much about it or haven't watched it in 12 years, you can establish that sort of rapport with, I hate to say character, but with these competitors early. Like in episode 1 and 2, you're like, no, I like this one and I don't like this one. I hope they duke it out in elimination, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Much to our dismay at times, that's why they keep unpopular people around, because hate watching is definitely a thing.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I don't like, this is not too big of a spoiler, Ayana, for example.
Right.
But her absence is notable.
That's an interesting one, because I think there's still plenty of drama happening that doesn't... Yeah. I like my villains on the challenge to be relatively self-aware.
like Wes or so?
Like Wes, I think Amanda can kind of, times, turn and wink to the camera. I think Devin definitely does that. Kyle was great at being antagonistic, but...
Kyle's just so antagonistic that he's a protagonist.
Yeah.
Let's get into the spoilers. If you have not caught up with Challenge All-Stars, you should, if you're a fan. And if you're not a fan, I don't know, dip your toe in. All-Stars can really draw in a viewer who hasn't seen the challenge in many years. That seems to be what it was designed to do. We're going to get into some more of that in just a second. So let's do the spoiler line. Here you go. And I'll start with this. What are your thoughts on the show or the producers kind of turning away from what made it great?
Specifically with All-Stars?
With All-Stars and with maybe even the flagship show and some other of its shows.
If the challenge is going to continue and Real World and Road Rules are not, then they have to have fresh faces coming from somewhere. I don't love the way that they've done it, but that may be more a characteristic of influencer culture and the fact that these folks can get a toehold of fame and X amount of Instagram followers and then be like a fitness guru or a model or a, you know, motivational whatever. It's just, it seems very silly because now they're professional reality TV stars, which takes some of the, what I was talking about earlier, not that it was ever real life. They were always kind of playing characters. They were aware that they were playing characters on the show, but they were also just people. And now they, you know, it's changed the game. And I do think that what was so nice about All-Stars when it started was that you had this old school original. They'd been vetted by that process of application and been on the show and you know, some people would say the golden era of it.
Cat Williams, in his most recent Netflix stand-up, has a great joke about you can be an influencer now and not even influence one person.
Yeah. I think what has been great about All-Stars so far, and it was almost I remember us kind of laughing at the first challenge on the episode 1, season 1, that they may not have calibrated the competition to the contestants, that it was physically too hard. That they didn't realize that, especially then, they were dealing with folks in their 40s, folks in their 50s, you know, people who have been dedicated to careers and children and not working out and partying in equal measure. That's changed, and now some pretty young faces on this season, and it sounds, from the look of things, it's trending more and more in that direction.
Yeah, All-Stars is kind of a half and half now with season 4. It's half people you recognize from 15 years ago versus some people you recognize from only 5 years ago.
Well, so even somebody like Cam, who is a fan favorite at times, though she may be wearing out her welcome this season. You know, she does not fit the criteria of the original All-Stars setup.
No, and if you're following rumors on who may be cast for the next All-Star season, it just doesn't fit the term All-Stars, does it, to
no,
you?
No, not at all.
For example, Fessy's rumored could very well be on All-Stars season 5, and he's made a final, what, every time he's been on the show, but it just seems like he hasn't been there long enough. Am I right about him being in a final every time?
I think so. Did he go home one time for like a physical altercation or something?
Oh, that you know what? You may be right. Yeah. Okay. So every
but
time
other
he
than
has
that,
it,
yeah.
Yeah. Other than a DQ, he's been.
He's also coming from a CBS program in Big Brother, and I'm not.
Right.
I'm not into that as a feeder. You know, even if you have to branch out and you say, okay, Ari the One, that's fine. You can have been on that. That brings in Tori and Devin and Cam and folks like that. Nelson, if he were still competing. Yeah, I don't know about opening it up. This seemed like it was supposed to be the safe place for classic challenge fans.
Have they recalibrated the competitions too much? Are they too easy now?
No, I think they're, like this previous week's was a great example of it can be fun and goofy, but also a physical challenge.
With going down the...
Going the luge, and they had to wear the goofy bobblehead thing.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
So it looks funny, but it also looked fun. You know, you're thinking, oh, that looks like a good time sliding down that thing. But they're also trying to collect the water, and, you know, there was some strategy involved. That's just a great blend of...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need, like, pyrotechnics every time, or night challenges, or whatever they've done in the last few seasons. Just come up with a good, kind of goofy thing, and let them go.
What would be your criteria for being an all-star or being a person to come on to all-stars? Would it be age?
I think
number of seasons?
I think it needs to be somebody who came from an MTV show. And I know that eventually they will age out of people who meet that criteria. So they're mm-hmm. looking towards the future. They need to have put in a bit of time, made some hopefully won some finals, but obviously there's only a limited number of those, but at least made finals, kind of made a name for themselves. And yeah, if they're maybe a little too, you know, like somebody like Durrell. Durrell can go on the main season and hold his own, but hasn't really made a deep run in a long time. I hate to doubt the guy, but like, does he have what it takes to win a final anymore? I don't know. On the main show, that's a great candidate to come in to All-Stars. Leroy is kind of trending that direction. He could have stuck around the main program, but probably mid-30s, sure, dip your toe in All-Stars. If somebody like Tori showed up, I would say, no, you need to go back to the main show.
Well, you know, it's possible that I keep going back to Fessy just because he's the one I remember. It's possible he's going to be in season 5.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous.
It is.
That breaks all of my criteria.
Yeah. I wish they would come out with a nice set of criteria, like if you've won any championship, you can come on this, or if you've been in 3 finals or more, or if you've won 6 eliminations or more, like those would be the, or if you've won 8 dailies or more, like those kinds of things. I think that would be really interesting.
And they could change it season to season, because obviously they build those criteria, and then they say, here's who fits it, and then they call them, and they're all into careers, having families, whatever, they can't do it. I understand that you have to cast a wide net sometimes, but...
Yeah. You have strong opinions on challengers not showing up in shape. It's happening here. You want to call them out? How do they make it as far as they do? I'm looking at Veronica and Tina. You know I am.
I know you are.
I'm trying to think on the guy's side, honestly. But there's been such a non-factor this season.
This is a women's season, for sure.
It is.
Heavy hitters on the women's side. Legends. I kind of have a soft spot for Tina. I think she's funny. I think she is one of the, even if she's being the antagonist, she kind of knows.
That self-awareness you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. With Veronica, I'm like, I know that you show up and you provide some good talking head footage. Does she hope to win a final, you know?
Or make it even? I don't know. There isn't nearly as much drama this season. So what, is there a storyline or two that's has your interest peaked?
I mean, Kara getting betrayed.
Yeah.
Episode before last, I think, is going to be what carries it.
I do too.
For at least the middle part of the season. And Nicole and Laurel's train wreck of whatever's happening there. Not really game drama, but I guess could turn into it.
I don't see how Ace doesn't win this season, and here's why. That man has not had 1 minute of screen time total.
He really hasn't, aside from being a good, sympathetic shoulder to cry on a few times. I think Ace had great moments with Janelle when she was leaving. You know, just gave her a good hug and seemed very, very sympathetic and had stayed out of the fray, didn't, like, you know, come to her side and add to the drama, but was clearly being supportive. which was nice to see. I think the Cam drama in general, Cam and Leroy, you know, they know that we really like Leroy. And that Cam is being really annoying, but is also interesting viewing because of where they're at in life. You know, I mean, how many times has a, you know, new mother come on and still been like collecting milk to take back home? That's crazy.
That's intense. Yeah, my predictions are Ace and Cara Maria.
But there's just one winner.
The top. No, I know. For the, those are my two, you know, for a man and woman, if I have to, if I can get that those two in.
Who wins out of those two, though?
Probably Cara and Maria.
Do you like Cara being back after kind of being shadow banned, her and Polly?
No, I do. A lot, yeah. She just adds a lot to the show. She's really, she shows up in shape. She takes it seriously. And I like that she doesn't, has drama, but doesn't like, isn't insanely negative about the drama.
You know?
I just appreciate that. I said this in my column this week, that the best challengers to me are those who have some friction, but it's, they're not going around being weird about it or lying. Hard to watch because of their negativity. She doesn't really have any of that.
Whereas Laurel at times can veer into
a little toxicity. Ayana was
just pure toxicity.
Ayana's a good example. Jay from last season.
He was terrible.
Michelle are, from last season are both good examples of this. Yep.
It's funny to see Cara back after that just awful season 39. I mean, Cara would have just feasted on everybody in season 39. You drop any of these folks in, I think that's what I mean by it's just a different type of person that they got back in the day. How much more nuanced and developed the storylines are in All-Stars versus it just feels 2D when you go back to season 39.
There's so many dream scenarios that you and I could cook up on here, and that, and we don't want to waste everyone's time with that too much. But what I wouldn't give if season 39 replayed, they did the same thing and they just dropped Leroy in. Just you know, or someone like that, or Leroy and Devin. You know, that would just be like, or and Cara Maria,
Corey,
those three.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Even somebody who hasn't won like that. Yeah.
Right. It would just be fascinating. Anyway, there you go. Anything you really wanted to get off your chest about All-Star Season 4 so far?
I want to pull for Leroy so bad, but he's kind of shit in the bed.
You know, he looks in shape, but he just hasn't performed well. I don't know. Well, he got his win. He got his elimination win. Maybe that'll something to build off of.
And he's getting in some team scenarios that, you know, that can be tough to end up with the wrong folks. But
doesn't take but one bad apple.
You want Leroy to do well.
You do. Curious to see if Cam sticks around as long as he does. I mean, that's probably impossible in a way, unless they both make a final. Just curious to see. Little break, little music for your ears, and Donovan and I are going to be back after the break. Adam's going to join us too because he's read the book, The Sympathizer. That's what we're going to be talking about, and that'll be spoiler territory. See you in a second. Okay, we're back. That music provided to you by The Lookers. Okay, no comment. We'll move on.
Oh, I was waiting for you to be like, pick them up wherever fine records are sold.
No. I was waiting on the follow-up.
Nope, no follow-up. Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk about The Sympathizer based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning book of the same name by Viet Thanh Nguyen. The book's about an unnamed captain who was playing both sides of the Vietnamese North and South during that war until he shipped off to the U.S. to watch over the general whom he's been implanted with as a mole to report back to North Vietnam or just Vietnam at this point. If you don't want to know anything more, again, spoilers is where we are with the podcast here. My question to you, Donovan, to begin is, do you see the point of having Robert Downey Jr. aboard to do the roles of four different men?
I'm not sure that it is absolutely necessary. My assumption is that it is. So we have, what are his, the CIA agent.
Correct.
Claw,
the Professor Hammer.
Professor Hammer.
Yeah, isn't that great? And then the congressman.
Man,
that congressman.
Yeah, I'm actually really enjoying his little congressman act. And then the filmmaker.
He's an actor or filmmaker or both?
He's a filmmaker. He's going to make a movie about something related to
that. That congressman is note perfect, by the way.
My assumption is that it is sort of a commentary on, like, American power and imperialism can wear many faces.
Okay.
And portray itself in different ways.
Yeah.
And also try to ingratiate itself and use you in different ways, but it's all coming from the same place.
I like that.
Is it absolutely necessary? I'm probably not. Do I dislike it? No, actually, he's having fun. I'm having fun,
yeah,
too.
I like it also as a joke or a play on the joke of all Asians look alike. And now
yes.
We have all Americans, all the major Americans
yes.
in the series look alike.
I was really enjoying just having like worked in academia, was really enjoying Professor Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Is John Waters take.
And, well, he's doing some capital A acting that's so capital.
Oh,
it's
he's chewing the scenery.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that, which leads into like another thing that I thought about these two episodes that other people might disagree with me. But this series is low-key, like, really funny.
Oh, yeah, it's very funny.
I've been laughing the whole time.
It's more funny than it is maybe anything else. I do wonder, I was wondering this in the second episode, is just how dangerous is the general that he could possibly warrant a spy in the U.S.? Like, why do they think that? And I know this is not nonfiction, but some of this stuff played out in reality. There uh-huh. are stories of people getting killed because they had sympathetics to a particular side, and they were in California in the 70s.
I assume it's just they're consolidating power. They're about to, they're going to fight a war with China not too long from now. They're going to invade Cambodia not too long from now. They probably want to keep an eye on anything that could possibly destabilize what they're doing to consolidate the country. That's my guess. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it would be kind of dumb to be like, eh, he's probably fine.
Okay. Am I too much of a simpleton to state that this series is about dualities?
No, it's totally what it's about.
Okay. Just countless examples.
He's neither Vietnamese nor American, right? Mm-hmm. Because even the Vietnamese, and even like some other characters, right? With like Juan, they're like, well, you know, his mom was Chinese. You can't trust that kind. You know, he's neither American nor Vietnamese. It's like he says in the third episode, right? Like the spy has to be all these things all the time. Mm-hmm. Or you end up in a re-education camp.
Yeah. I love the distinction they're making with the show and probably with the book is that it's not about opposites, but it's about two things existing, usually internally.
That is kind of another thing that I felt like the Robert Downey Jr. multiple character things is doing, where it's like, you know, as he's, you know, it is kind of fun, like, and hopefully he puts the professor to shame a little bit, right? But like when the professor tells him to do that horrible, like, name your Occidental and Oriental qualities.
I couldn't believe it.
Right?
But this was the 70s. That kind of shit was...
Like, he's playing along with him, right? And he's kind of playing the role. But yeah. Also, he's like, remember, like, you know, it could be both and.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Instead of either or. He's a both and.
Detachment goes a long way in this show that creates this black comedy we're kind of talking about. My favorite was when the general asked the captain to write the eulogy of the major. He calls him, he's like, you know, basically the deed is done.
It's done.
And he's like, okay, well, will you write the eulogy for me? All right, thanks. Hilarious.
There were so many, I felt like even at the beginning of the second episode where like Bon, mm-hmm. obviously deeply depressed, he's
yes.
just seen his wife and child killed, probably feels like he has nothing to live for. But the captain is trying to engage him, right? They're in a motel somewhere in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns on the magic fingers bed to try and just like... Like, Bud's just lying there. He's got the massaging bed going. It's so, like, it's horrible, right? But, like, that was so funny to me.
Yeah. Another good example is when Bon and the captain are scoping out how and where to kill the lumpy major, as I called him. The lumpy, they called him.
Dumpling.
Yeah, the dumpling. That's it. And his aging mother appears, and she talks them into coming in and gives them, like, a drink and or tea
yeah,
or coffee and questions them about what they've been discussing. Like, What is it that you said you can't eat? What were you talking about there?
Yeah.
And they're like, blood pudding. Adam, is there this much humor in the book?
Yeah. I think from what I remember, it felt a bit absurd, a bit. I have to be honest. It blends together with Tree of Smoke by Dennis Johnson in my head a bit.
Oh, really? Really?
Which is obviously the American side, the CIA operating during the war.
Fascinating.
That one is just almost like a Catch-22 style romp at time, and it's horrific, but it's also funny and
yeah.
kind of like a Tree of Smoke. What are we actually doing here? The absurdities of every task given are kind of taken as a whole to illustrate, I would assume in Johnson's point of view, the pointlessness of the war, or at least Americans sure. being there.
How good is that book, by the way? Not to be too tangential.
Yeah, it's real good.
It's been sitting on my shelf
for a while. It's a big one, especially for Dennis Johnson, who...
It is big.
Yeah. For him, yeah.
yeah.
I remember taking away that the more that I engage with things about the Vietnam War, specifically things that didn't come out in the 60s and 70s, that maybe people have had more time to see how all the... where the dominoes fell and what that meant and how that rippled over time. People have kind of... yeah, there's just a collection of absurd happenings that can be funny and tragic.
Another big through line for the show for me, right, because it is an absurd situation, right? But it's people that have been placed in an absurd situation. And part of that I've been thinking is maybe part of the point, maybe not, but like the Americans can move on. Claude's on to right. his next thing. They're going to make a movie out of this. But like the Vietnamese people very, very much cannot move on from this. Like America can, like, well, we lost. See you guys later. You know, and they can't. They're stuck.
Yeah, it brings to mind how one of the American viewpoints watching this show would have to be, why don't you, if you're talking to the captain and you think, why don't you just go ahead and side with who you're pretending to side with? You're already halfway there mentally.
Just disappear.
Yeah, just become the Americanized version of what you're pretending to be.
He's a good soldier.
Right. I mean, that's exactly. a big question, right? Is like, what holds someone to their duty when that becomes
yes.
less and less tangible?
And I do think that there's like a sort of, I think I might be misusing this word, right? But like irony, right? Especially as we're watching like the major tell about how like how easy it is to become an American as long as you have money. And like there's this kind of like irony from the audience. It's like we know, right, in our... that we are not in a post-racial world, right? That, like, I am always assumed to be an American, but for someone who's from overseas with an accent, it's not that easy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that easy to just be an American, right? It's not that easy to just be Vietnamese. It's not that easy to just be whoever you're supposed to
even
be.
Even though international conflict chews you up and spits you out on all corners of the globe in this kind of, like, uncontrollable way.
Yeah, absolutely.
It also speaks to, if you just have money, it's going to be good. As well as, we don't have money. The capitalism nature of it, I guess. Now, by the way, apparently a Vietnamese is just a casually crude language. I think it's like really easy to cuss in Vietnamese. It just comes naturally. The major, by the way, in that third episode, has that wonderful line about acclimating to American culture. That if you don't, you're just a ghost living between two worlds forever.
Yep. A little on the nose, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was.
I mean, it wasn't that
bad. But the line was so good that I liked it.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting of the dualities is this idea that we're all in new situations, new country, new lives, new start, but we're all doing the same old shit.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. I talked at the beginning how I thought that the second episode was kind of, I guess just after the punch of the first episode, it was a letdown. And that's on me, I suppose. Expectations, maybe. But I thought that I would have this reaction once they got to the U.S. because I'm so interested in the Vietnamese aspect of it.
I don't think I had that letdown because I knew it wasn't going to be a Vietnam War show.
Okay.
And I know that it is very explicitly, right? Like talking about like the interaction of Vietnam and America, you know, and trying to do it in a way that, like, we can set Apocalypse Now in Platoon and whatever, like, in Vietnam, and that's, like, Americans dominating and interacting with Vietnam. So now, like, let's flip that on its head, and let's put a Vietnamese person into America.
Mm-hmm. I think the third episode also gave me a lot of the spy craft that creates just a sort of natural tension of who's going to do what and when and where, and will it work out?
Yeah.
And then the comedy of it.
I just love some of the stuff that the director does is so great. Like the scene where they're actually assassinating the major and it pulls out and his mom is smoking.
Yeah.
On the balcony above them the whole time as they're... It was great. It
looked
great.
Their big worry that she was going to hear.
Yes.
And then she was obviously not hearing. I can see how this works really great as a book, because with a book, it's not too big of an issue for this chapter to be here, the next chapter to be there, and then the next chapter be totally different place. So when I saw the trailer for episode 4 and it looks like it's going to be focused on making a movie. I'm like, that seems like a shift in gears.
Well, it's just such a sprawling story.
I didn't realize it would be that sprawling, maybe. It's my expectations. I thought it was just going to be a real dramatic rendering of here's spy in America, what happens? But no, it seems it's a lot more than that.
Even as I refamiliarize myself on Wikipedia, because it has been. I read this during the pandemic, I think, when I was reading a lot of...
mush brain.
Well, and we were just reading so much that it, yeah, it can get a bit mushy in there. But yeah, I mean, it's just so little... almost like side stories in a way that needed to be in there for the whole. But I'm like, oh yeah, that was this book. That wasn't this other thing that I read dealing with Vietnam. It's all wrapped into the same. Yeah, it's a lot.
I love what's going on here about America too. He calls it the strange and bountiful land. I think it's when he's writing out what he wants to say to the commander back in Vietnam. The framing device of him being back in Vietnam, obviously as a prisoner. I'm gonna ask Adam not to answer, but Donovan, how reliable is this captain as a narrator, and is that going to be a big factor?
That is a really good question. And answer number one is I don't know.
Of course.
Question number two is, or answer number two is, like, he seems like not maybe deceitful exactly so much as, like, he will withhold information, right? Or not tell you the whole story until it's like, okay, well, yes, I need to back up, you know?
Yeah.
So he's maybe not like the most reliable interpreter of his own story. Does that make sense? That might not be. I don't know if that makes sense.
Adam, you want to slyly comment on that at all?
I'll hold out. I don't remember enough.
That's fine. Big hints of fear and loathing in Las Vegas in that final scene with Claude. It was just like a jarring kind of edit where you get Claude suddenly playing the piano and singing. And all the other versions of Robert Downey Jr. doing blow off of half-naked women.
My absolute favorite one was the one that was like eating whip at the senator eating whipped cream off the girl on the table, and he's just he's a former Green Beret, Blaine. Napalm Ned.
The captain chooses to go sit by himself to read the script.
Yeah, poor captain.
Love that actor though. I hate that I can't pronounce his name. Maybe I should do that.
Also, this is a very, very little thing, but I guess he's Vietnamese Australian, and man, he is like his parents are Vietnamese. He's from Australia.
Oh, that's great.
He is nailing an American accent.
Oh yeah, he's really good. He cracked me up in episode one when he was singing "Lowrider," kind of mumbling singing like we all do in a car. I love that scene. To me, that encapsulated how he's half. You know, he's in Vietnam, and he's in the middle of all this shit, but yet he loves Lowrider. And not
right, and it's like he can connect with, like, he went to school in the States, right? Like, he can connect with Claude over popular music, right? Like, he can play all these different roles, and, you know, but, like, in the void, maybe, is him, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. We'll see where it goes, but, like, in a very, like, Conradian sense, right? Like, at the end of the day, maybe he's like, who am I?
Right.
You know, we already see that with his father, right? Questions about his father.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking the squid, of course.
Well, who doesn't want to fuck a squid? Masturbate with a squid. Makes sense, right? Don't forget he went to school in the States under the tutelage of Professor Hammer.
Yes, he did.
Hugely important.
Yes, he did.
Robert Downey Jr., that one cracked me up in such a cringe worthy sort of way.
It is interesting how both Hammer and Claude specifically refer to him as my protege. Like, both of them think that in different ways.
And I'm willing to bet the congressman and the movie producer probably is going to think a very similar
probably
thing. Right. Everybody thinks they own the captain, but no one does. I don't know. We'll see. Because, you know, the commander back in Vietnam obviously thinks, as he's forcing him to write his, memoir?
Yeah, testimony.
Testimony, I suppose, is a much more accurate term. I felt the second episode dragged, but that was simply because of my expectations and having watched the first episode and thinking it was going to be a little bit more straightforward sort of drama of post-Vietnam.
That's so funny to me because, like, the minute, like, the second episode starts in the refugee camp and they're like, the general's hiding in the bathroom with the latrine.
Oh, that's...
And the general's like, who could be saying bad things about me? Somebody must be inciting this. Like, he just has no clue, right? It's like, that was hilarious to me. Like, then I was like, oh, I'm completely in with this episode.
I think my uncomfort level with how many flies were floating around is what caused me to be distracted.
It was great.
Donovan, real quick, comments on Sandra Oh as the older lover.
Miss Maury, she's funny. I like Sandra Oh. She's good. It's good to see her really using her acting chops.
Yes. She always brings this plain-spoken, straightforward attitude to a lot of her roles.
Where very
shut
blunt.
The fuck up, do this, you know?
She puts up with a lot from Professor Hammer, so it's good. It's good to see that she's...
She does, but she also gives it back. I love that.
I'm liking her character, too, so far, because she's very, very perceptive, and she notices things that are important, maybe without even quite knowing how important they are. For instance, noticing that the captain is a very good listener. And he makes it seem as if he's agreeing with you, even though he never actually says anything.
And if you're going to cast an older lady that a younger guy would find attractive, you cast Sandra Oh.
She's been keeping up with her workouts.
Is she going to have more of a role than just pointing out these things that we know about the captain that she doesn't fully understand yet?
I don't know. I'm happy to just kind of wait and see. I am really curious, much like the Commandant is, right? Because I have not read the book. Right? How sincere can a spy be when they have a fling, right?
Like, that's true.
Isn't there always, what's the ulterior motive?
I like the complexity, yeah.
As the commandant said, were you just playing around?
Yeah.
You know, is it just an escape? Is it just something fun?
And the captain says, I was just digging into America.
Like, I was working very hard. Also, I know it shouldn't be funny, but Bond turning around the photo of his family.
Yeah, during sex. Why, how did you do this in front of my wife?
He's like, I did it in the bedroom. Like, that makes it better.
Donovan or Adam, I'll let you guys answer the final question here. Both of you have a chance. Do you ever worry someone's going to throw a toilet out of a 5-story window at you?
That was so funny. Just to get completely in with, like, the general's, like, paranoia of, like, you completely fucked up, but who could be mad at me? The, like, it was an assassination attempt. It was great.
And I know it's supposed to up the stakes, but I did laugh that he pulled the pistol right then.
Yes!
That little pistol he keeps carrying.
It's like little 38 or whatever it's supposed to be. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a gun person.
Yeah, well, me either. But then he gets the really big one from Claw. It's scary 44 Magnum or whatever.
The phallically large like 44 Magnum that he's loading up. That he uses to crush the candy.
And I know we're going long here, but I'm sorry, but Claude acting as a gay man walking a dog killed me.
Oh, man. The exchange where he's like, am I supposed to pick that up?
The dog poops.
And the captain's like, that's what a civic-minded homosexual would do. And then he picks it up with his scarf and gives it to the captain.
There's such good moments in this, and although I was a bit of a downer on episode 2, I did love episode 3. We'll see what goes.
I'm curious, because we both had a very same experience watching these back-to-back playing, and I thought, wow, this is perfectly paced. Like, both of these episodes are perfectly paced. I'm not bored at all. I feel like it's propulsive. I'm really engaged with what's going on.
See, I loved everything about the third episode in that same way. I loved him going to the party with his lover. I loved everybody's reaction there. The congressman shows up to just show the scarred hand. So
that was
John McCain
that was
style.
Funny. he makes him read the introduction. Not as much as the scars that have been inflicted on your on your country.
Wynn had to have had in mind John McCain for that role, the character in the book, right? Or Bob Dole? Is that a Bob Dole reference? I don't know.
I almost wonder if he's not thinking of John Wayne a little bit too.
Oh, well.
Just from being in the Green Berets and being, you know, kind of the ass he was.
People of a certain age who aren't American immediately think John Wayne.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this week. Find us online and go sign up for the newsletter. Get you a newsletter out this week with some thoughts and ideas and tips. I got a tip this week about an app.
Just the tip, Blaine?
Only the tip.
Okay.
Amigo.
That's important to me.
That's a promise I make to you. For Adam and Donovan, I'm Blaine. I'll see y'all. Well, we'll hear from... I keep saying see y'all. We'll hear from y'all, maybe. You'll hear from us next week. Adios. Thanks, y'all.